This episode of Commentary, Trek Stars, is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to the third season finale of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. But today we're going to be doing something a little different. We're going to be looking at the work of Star Trek creators inside of Star Trek. All right. I am Mike.
I'm Max.
That's Max. And we are joined by a number of people from across the Trek FM network today.
And/Planet.
Yes, and/Planet. So I'm going to try to go clockwise around the world and see if this works.
You have to quantify it in some way. You can't just list the names on the screen.
No, you know, it's got to be some order. First up, in Indiana, is Drew from Standard Orbit. How's it going, Drew?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad you're here, too. Okay, next, over in, I'm going to say, New Jersey, is Jason. How's it going, Jason?
It's going pretty well, thank you, and indeed that is correct. Scenic New Jersey.
All right, and Jason is on the phone right now, which is why his voice sounds a little like phone-like, but you know what? Who cares? All right, and Jason, you do a lot of the articles for Trek FM and stuff, or something like that, right? Am I right?
I have been, in theory, working on stuff for the animated series area of the site. That had been kind of sadly unincluded until that point.
All right. Now, next up in D.C. is Daniel from, what's the name? Earl Grey.
Are you there?
Here we go. Okay, I can't, there's just too many shows on this freaking network.
I listen to some of your shows, but it's cool. It's not a big deal.
No, I listen. I just don't know names. Names? Oh. Earl Grey.
I still think it should have been called Give Us the D.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know if that would have been entirely appropriate, but yeah. Hey, how's it going?
It's the Enterprise D. I don't see the problem.
All right. And then your co-host on Earl Grey. See, I know. I know what these names are. Is down in North Carolina. Philip. How's it going, Philip?
Doing great. I'm glad to be here on Commentating Star Shows. That's the name of it, right? Is that?
See, that's fine. No one can keep our names straight either. You know, that's fine. You know, I
think it's because our name is a joke.
That's true.
That's gone on way too long.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry that I agreed that it was a good title. But you came.
Well,
up
I'm looking.
With it.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the crisscross dedicated podcast commentary, Mac Daddy Stars. So.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Now he's going to have to
like
start
that.
A crisscross show.
Yeah, if anyone is a fan of crisscross, you have a home on our network.
Warning:
not this network,
the podcast
network.
Will make you want to jump.
That's awesome. I think that you should be the host, Philip.
All right. I'm going to change my clothes real quick.
Okay. I look forward to listening to this in the past.
Well, you can. Keep your same clothes. You just put them on backwards, and then you're all good.
No,
yeah. No,
Mike,
no. Thank you. That's
not how it works. It's not that. It's not just backwards clothes. Okay. There's a whole lifestyle to this.
All right. Okay. All right. And finally, over in Japan, the man responsible for this whole big, what would you call it?
Ball of wax.
What's the word?
Enterprise.
For it,
Chris. From too many shows to...
From too many
to,
shows.
Come on. Yes. Name them all.
The Ready Room.
He doesn't know them. That's why he can't name them.
The Warp 5. The Orb.
The Warp
Literary
5.
Treks. Continuing Missions.
Don't you mean The Continuing Missions?
The Continuing Missions. You know.
Oh, man.
All yes, of those yes. other things, you know.
Lots of other shows.
MISC. Etc.
Exactly.
Star Trek. And so on.
Yes. Thanks for joining us, Chris. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so what we're doing today. Now, I'm freely admitting that I've stolen this idea from Kevin Smith, who on his Batman show was talking about the Mount Rushmore of Batman and who he would put on it. And he didn't actually get into who he would put on. He was just saying that, you know, if you were to make a Mount Rushmore of Batman, Denny O'Neill would have to be on there. And I was like, that's an awesome idea. We should totally do that for Star Trek. You know? Okay. So today,
and I said, that's not an awesome idea.
And I said,
that's wrong.
And I said, it would make for a
good
discussion.
Completely ridiculous.
And okay. You said, no, it wouldn't.
Yes.
And then we debated who would be on the Mount Rushmore of Star Trek.
And
for
I
like
said, no one
minutes.
Belongs on it.
Oh, no. You were.
I said, no one. There's no good answer.
Okay.
Every time you think about it, you will come up with different names.
And yet, it leads to a good debate. So.
Sure.
So.
It's the Kobayashi Maru.
What we're
going to
do today is we're each going to give our take on this topic, you know, and we're going to give our four names, who we think should be on there, who contributed to Star Trek in some way or another, which, you know, makes them stand above the rest. So, I guess just to set the tone, I'll go first. Now, my first name is a name which I imagine will be on everyone's list, although maybe some people will surprise me. I'm going to start in order of when they became involved with the franchise. Gene Roddenberry, this guy, he created Star Trek. He, you know, had a hand in writing most episodes of season one of the show, so he really kind of shaped the original series. He created the animated series, as Jason, I'm sure, will tell you. He produced the motion picture, and he created The Next Generation. So, I mean, really, if there's going to be one person on this thing, it's going to be him, obviously. If there's going to be two people on this thing,
it's going to be him and old him.
Like they are stamps? Two different people. Yes, that's true. But if you count Gene Roddenberry as one person, I would say that the next person on this mountain would have to be Rick Berman. He took over the franchise from Gene Roddenberry and ran it. He really did shape the Next Generation era. And he created more live-action shows than anyone else in history, Star Trek-wise. He created Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise, in addition to running Next Generation during its sort of glory years. Next up is going to be a choice which may be a little weird, especially for me, but I think it's deserving, and that's Leonard Nimoy. He really is the face of Star Trek. You know, anyone who doesn't know what Star Trek is, if you say Star Trek, the first person they think of is Leonard Nimoy. He's got the ears. He's got all that stuff. He's been there from the beginning. He was in the pilot all the way up through what is currently the end, Into Darkness. He's certainly the most iconic actor in the franchise. And he directed two of the movies, in addition to, you know, having a hand in writing some of them as well. So he's my third face. And my fourth face was really tough because there were, as I see it, about five people who were in some way or another deserving of this slot. And after much debate, I decided that my fourth face would be Michael Piller because he really was responsible for turning Next Generation around in season three. I have a feeling that we wouldn't care about Next Generation if it weren't for Michael Piller.
Does he have a baseball cap in your version?
Of course he has a baseball cap.
How do you sculpt that in stone?
He's got a North Carolina baseball cap.
You didn't
cap.
Think this through.
No, he's totally got that. He also created two other series. In addition to Next Generation, you know, his involvement in Next Generation, he did Deep Space Nine and Voyager. And he was the showrunner for, if I'm not mistaken, 9 seasons of Star Trek, which is well more than anyone else. So, for all those reasons and more, Michael Piller is my fourth face. So there you go. Gene Roddenberry, Rick Berman, Leonard Nimoy, Michael Piller.
See, that didn't go like I was expecting at all. I expected it to be TOS Shatner, movie Shatner, animated Shatner, and...
Spoilers!
I don't
spoilers.
Even know.
Dude.
Generation Shatner.
We're going to need another mountain.
Fine, I got to write a new list, you guys.
Sorry.
All right. So, Max, what have you got?
Well, I actually did spend a lot of time trying to think about, like, if there is a good selection of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I did go through a very long process of there's absolutely no good selection of four people that actually reflects Star Trek in a positive way.
Any it doesn't selection... have to be in a positive way.
And
it has to be representative of the series.
And that, I think, is important, because I think representative of a series is like representative of what the series is supposed to be about. And I think the whole idea of making a monument to four people is very anti-Star Trek.
Fair enough.
And so, like, I thought the best way to go would be to take the ironic approach. And so I thought Khan.
Okay.
Just Khan. One giant statue of Khan.
Okay.
The entire mountain is Khan. And, of course, it's Mikado Montalban Khan, because I just don't want to deal with that nonsense.
Now, old Khan or young Khan?
Like, that's where it got into the problem, which is why I don't actually think that's the best option.
Okay.
Because, like, Khan is kind of a complicated character, has a long history, and ultimately you end up in the question of, like, where are we in history with this Khan? Because, like, are we saying, like, this is part of his empire? He's ruling Earth right now? Is that the idea? Are we trying to play into the history of the series? And I'm like, no, I don't want to make this, like, an in-canon reference. You know, like, it has to be a statement about Star Trek and its role in society, and so I thought it has to mean something more than just, like, what the thing is supposed to be, and I eventually came up with a Borg cube.
The Borg cube.
Because the monument is like, be, like a monument is essentially a representative of an icon, like, you know, like, be this thing, this is a thing to aspire to, and the whole idea of monuments is essentially conformity, like, aspire to this, be like what people want you to be. The Borg cube is the perfect monument to represent everything that Star Trek isn't.
Is it to scale?
But you know, Max, doing a Borg cube on the mountain is going to take a really long time, because you've got to chisel every one of those little pipes on the side of the ship.
Honestly, that sounds textured awesome monument. To me. That sounds so cool. I would love that. I mean, imagine, like, you could actually tour that. You couldn't, like, just look at it. You could actually walk around in that monument. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome.
Plus, think about this. You know, over time, weathering will wear down the monument on the mountain, but a Borg cube monument will be able to repair itself.
He's got a point.
Well, sure. Sure, so yeah.
It's,
I mean,
it's economical,
if, like,
in the long run.
Yeah, I assume, like, every little nook and cranny is going to have its own gift shop. So, like, there's going to be people who are maintaining the environment over time. Yeah. But I mean, like, that was the idea that I came with, and then I was like, you know, ultimately it has to be faces, just because it has to be, you know, doable. And I thought, you know, Kirk, Spock, McCoy.
Okay.
And none of my options have four faces. And Kirk, Spock, McCoy, I think, is a great thing because it's representative of Star Trek history. But I do prefer the Borg cube concept. I think that would be a cooler monument. I think it would mean more. I think it would be more representative of, like, what Star Trek is about. I think when people stood there and, like, read the plaque about it, they would, like, go, that is really interesting. I get this. But everything else is just not interesting enough.
All right. Fair enough. Outside of the box thinking.
When there's a large group of people in front of the plaque, do they have to say it together when they read
it? No. No, that's not what it's about, man. That's about what it's not.
All right. So your final pick, then, would be what? Are you going with the Kirk, Spock, and McCoy?
I like Kirk, Spock, McCoy just from a sculptural point of view. I think it would be pretty.
Okay.
But I do prefer the Borg cube as a monument.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right, Drew, I think you're up. What have you got? Let's hear this from the TOS perspective.
Well, first, I was trying to think of Mount Rushmore, and it's like, that's the Founding Fathers, right? And I looked it up, and it's like, no, it's not. Like, Teddy Roosevelt's on it. I don't know why these presidents are on this monument at all, but I still had this Founding Fathers idea stuck in my mind. And so I picked Gene Roddenberry as the creator. He's the George Washington. He founded it and made it. But then I also have Gene Kuhn as the second face, because I think he helped take Roddenberry to the next level. I mean, in TOS standards, not like TNG taking it to the next level, but just taking some of Roddenberry's ideas and making them reality. And then I've got DC Fontana, because I feel like she helped take the characters from Roddenberry's. I've got these characters, they're friends. Maybe, I don't know. And then DC Fontana's like, no, they're friends, and they form this triad and all that kind of thing. I like the, and I like having a woman on there. And then the fourth face, I didn't know where to go back and forth. I eventually settled on Matt Jeffries because he did all the design. He designed the original Enterprise. He designed the sets. And I feel like he helped bring the vision to the vision of the future. And so, yeah, that's my four. But
all right. So we got Gene Roddenberry, Gene Kuhn, DC Fontana, and Matt Jeffries.
Right.
All right.
But
sounds like a okay.
Yeah. But then I was talking to my wife before we started recording, and she's like, "Your list is stupid." And so, so here's how it went. She said Shatner. Well, not Shatner now. That would take too much rock. So we've got original series Kirk, and then she's like, and then Janeway.
Janeway.
And then Chakotay, really? Because it would be funny. And then I was like, you need a fourth one. She's like, Q. No, wait, Odo. No, a Tribble.
A Tribble. Okay.
A Tribble. Okay.
So we've got, so according to your wife, it should be Kirk.
TOS Kirk.
Kirk.
Shatner.
TOS Kirk.
Yeah.
Janeway. Chakotay. And a Tribble.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by the idea of sculpting a Tribble.
No, yeah, this is what she. Cool, this is why she picked those. She liked the idea of Odo because it would be really easy to sculpt because it's just kind of smooth. You just kind of sand it down.
Oh, so she's lazy about this. She knows that she's going to have to do it herself.
And then she settled on Tribble because she thought it'd be really funny to have, you know, three faces and then this puffball. Like maybe she thought maybe you could plant a bush, and like the bush is a Tribble.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
There's tons of those all over the place.
Yeah, when we lived in Nevada, we used to see Tribbles just blowing up the on-ramp to the highway all the time.
Say what? You gotta get on that, like you got a hand.
Was there ever any Tribble roadkill then?
Yeah, from time to time. You don't want to get a Tribble caught up under your car, I can tell you that.
Well, this is really unpleasant, you guys.
Okay, so that's Drew. Very, very much a TOS type of list, so that's good.
I hope that Matt Jeffries is on the monument at, like, a slightly weird height. So, like, you kind of go, like, why is he slightly, like, lower than everybody else, but not, like, low enough to be comfortable? Like, it's kind of at a weird place, like everything he designed. Slightly off what you'd think it should be.
So this way you need like a diagonal access hatch to get from one part of the monument to the other, thus the Jeffries tomb.
Of course.
I'm into that.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That works.
Go.
I'm into that.
All right. So
actually, a Jeffries tomb monument would be pretty dope.
That would be cool. That would be
That's
cool.
That's the playground in front of it. It's just Jeffries tubes.
Would Argyle still be inside hiding? In there somewhere.
Right. He runs, the gift shop inside, yeah.
The cafe.
There's a distillery there, a little bar. Yeah. Get your gin.
All right. So I think the next person would be Jason. So what have you got, Jason?
Okay, so I will confess that I did have some of those already announced. So while
That's
we're
fine.
In progress,
That's fine.
I've
you can...
some, I've made
no,
some
no, no, no. Okay, well, not, I mean, because, I mean, part of this, I think, is, you know, seeing where the commonality lies and whatnot, seeing if, you know, there is a if we can come up with maybe a final four at the end of this. So, you know.
How many other people have Borg cubes on their list?
Right. So who knows? So, I mean, go with your originals, even if they are the same as what some other people said.
Okay, well, initially, of course, Gene Roddenberry, the great bird of the galaxy, you can't have this without him.
Okay.
William Shatner, because he would not fit because his ego is too large for any mountainside, but that's a different matter. Of course, Rick Berman, his career, in, you know, from one Star Trek series to the next. But then David Livingston, director of, you know, many of the various Star Trek incarnations. You know, he's another major force to be reckoned with. But then my alternate substitutions are just as interesting. Jerry Goldsmith, doing the music for many of the movies, and Voyager and Next Generation. Also, Mark Leonard, often overlooked, but he played a Romulan, a Klingon, a Vulcan, a human, and probably other aliens that I can't think of at the moment as well. You know, from the series to the movies, I mean, he was quite ubiquitous as a TOS actor.
That's true. David Livingston, that's an interesting choice. If I'm not mistaken, he's directed more hours of I think he's directed more hours of Star Trek than anyone else.
Has he?
Right?
Is more than Cliff Bull.
Yeah, more than Cliff Bull. Okay. Cliff Bull's like number three or something like that.
I knew Livingston was right up there in the top couple, yeah.
Yeah, Bull has directed more than anyone else in Next Gen, but I think Livingston holds the record for the overall franchise.
Now I like the idea of having a Jeffries tube and the lionfish Livingston.
There you go.
Yes, indeed.
So,
my last substitution, Fred Freiberger.
Nice.
Okay.
He's another one who was, because all the props on the TOS set were always referred to as Freibergers.
Yes, yes. And he was, for those people who don't know, the guy who essentially ran the show in season 3 of the original series.
That's correct.
He's the guy who had to pick up the pieces after Gene Roddenberry
threw all the pieces to the floor and said, I'm done, and he just threw the chessboard down.
Right.
But apparently that narrative is slightly flawed, according to Mark Cushman.
Of course it is.
Something is off there.
Yes.
Maybe he was a monster. Maybe he was some sort of Gorgon on the set trying to destroy the show.
So just to summarize, for your initial picks, we have Gene Roddenberry, William Shatner, Rick Berman, and David Livingston, correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, all right. So we're now about at the halfway point, and there's some people who haven't made the list yet, which I'm rather surprised by. But, Daniel, I think you're next, right?
Sure, if you would want me to go. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's do that then.
So my first two are actually going to be, I know, of course, everybody's going to pick Gene, but I'm going to actually pick the power couple. I'm going to pick Gene and his wife, because really, you know, she contributed so much as well, you know, being in the very first episode all the way up into 2009, right? And she was featured in everything, you know, she was there all the way through. So, and like Drew, I wanted to pick a woman. So I thought that was kind of important, kind of Star Trek-y sometimes thing to do. So those would be my first two. And then I had to pick between Kirk, Spock, you know, between Shatner and Nimoy, and I picked Nimoy. That's just personal preference, but either one of those would have worked. Obviously, very important to the franchise as a whole. But Spock to me is kind of representative of the original series, and being the TNG guy, I had to pick Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard, as my fourth pick, because I don't know if TNG would have succeeded without him, and I don't know if anything could have come after TNG if it failed. So I think he's kind of a pillar of Star Trek as we know it now.
Okay, so you've got Gene Roddenberry, Majel Barrett, Leonard Nimoy, right? Okay, and then Patrick Stewart.
Yes, correct.
Sir Patrick
Stewart.
Okay,
you got the two captains and the two Roddenberries.
That's right.
Not bad, not bad.
Nice.
All right.
Captains and the Roddenberries would have made a great band.
it still could. You know?
Well, a good band for like one album.
All right. Philip,
yes.
I think it's your turn. All right.
Okay. Well, much like Mount Rushmore, I don't agree with who's on Mount Rushmore either. I mean, you know, I'm not Jefferson, don't buy into the hype. And then TR, really? I don't know. So that's the way that I approach this Trek, Mount Rushmore. I may not, like, really, you know, agree or like, but I recognize what they did. So that's how I went. And obviously you'll detect a theme when I did my pitch to my Earl Grey co-host, they rolled their eyes because they said, you're always doing themes, you know, be creative for God's sakes. But I can't be, so. All right, so here it goes.
I like themes.
Yeah, you know.
Yes, I'm very, you do.
So
I hope it's the Knight Rider theme.
It's actually it's a Dora the Explorer theme. No, that's never mind. That was the first part. No,
the map.
Swiper, stop the swiping.
Backpack.
Exactly.
Can you say backpack?
Captain, what course should I set? Let me ask the map.
I'm Stella Cartography.
Man, lots of dudes know lots about Dora the Explorer.
I'm Stella Cartography.
Special guest star Diego.
Where would you like to go?
Oh, goodness. So, here's the theme. Okay, first one, Gene Roddenberry. Yay, original Philip. I know it. So, my second one is Rick Berman. Okay, yeah, very original, just like everyone else. But you see where I'm going here. My third one, again, this I'm just having to pick what's out there, and this is my third pick, Ira Stephen Bear. As you can see, how I'm kind of doing the spectrum here, right? And for my fourth pick, you know, because... You know, picking Gene, you get the beginning, you get the TNG. Picking Rick Berman, you get basically TNG, DS9, Voyager, and then it. But Ira kind of represents that kind of special part of Deep Space Nine as well. And so, you know, this is the hard part for the fourth one. Do I go Michael Piller? Do I go Jerry Taylor? I'm like, no, for my fourth, I just have to pick J.J. Abrams as the fourth pick to complete the Star Trek spectrum and continuum. So, because, I mean, I think... all of them represent sort of the Star Trek spectrum. Everything that's. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like picking on anyone. So everything good. I'm not going to see the bad. All the good stuff about Star Trek.
I see what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
About how you may not agree with the choices.
Right. Appreciate choices. All the works they did. But I can appreciate. But to me, they definitely made Trek stronger. I mean, it's not like. Like, you know, if people who don't like J.J., well, you can't say he destroyed the Star Trek franchise. He made two films that did very well, and he's making a third one. So, I mean, you can't really say, you know, whatever. So, but anyway, or Iris, you know, if someone doesn't like Deep Space Nine and likes Voyager and TNG, or someone who likes TNG and, you know, Voyager and doesn't like Deep Space Nine and Enterprise and all that. So, but I think those are my four choices, kind of representing everyone. Everyone can come to this mountain and stare at one face and ignore others. And still get something, and buy at least one of the faces from the gift shop, because we have lots of good choices here.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Is the theme people who have very wildly mixed reputations?
It's actually potent potables is the category.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I was kind of looking at it the same way as you were, Philip. You know, I mean, when I was making my picks, I wasn't picking my personal favorites. I was picking, you know, people who I thought were, you know... had the sort of largest hand in shaping the franchise, whether it was for good or bad. And I did seriously consider putting JJ on there, but I just decided ultimately that even though that is an important piece of the franchise, it wasn't like a big enough piece.
Well, I mean, since we're going to do this on the existing Mount Rushmore, I assume, right? We're just getting rid of it. That way you don't have to change sure. the TR spectacles. You just keep those for JJ. Just put them right there.
There you go. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
My question is,
choose someone from JJ. I would have chosen Kienzer, and then you could also have the removable goggles that he wears when he wields things.
He's actually in a very.
I don't think we need that kind of nonsense here.
He's at a smaller mount.
Imagine how good the. Can you imagine how good the Ira Stephen Bear sunglasses would look in there? And then the whole thing is just going to be, you know, natural rock color except for his goatee, which
except
is great.
His goatee.
Painted
well, plus,
blue.
You know, yeah. Vandals who want to come and spray paint the mountain, they could just spray paint the blue goatee on.
We could make it like a blue, like, waterfall or something like that.
Oh, a waterfall beard.
On St. Patrick's Day, his beard is green. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Obviously, it's going to be plants.
Okay.
It's going to be natural. Or we just give the kids crayons and let them go nuts.
And you go to the gift shop, mountain. You're like, why? Yes. Why is there all these Star Wars toys
there's a,
here?
There's an intricate scaffolding to allow children to draw on the side of the mountain. Okay. I don't see a problem with this. Seems totally reasonable to me, you guys. I don't get the problem.
Okay, so to summarize, Philip, you have Gene Roddenberry, Rick Berman, Ira Stephen Bear, and J.J. Abrams.
Correct.
All right.
Something's wrong with the audio, because I'm pretty sure I'm not hearing the last one right.
There is still one person, which I am shocked, has not made anyone's list yet.
Don't reveal it yet.
If that changes with Chris's picks.
Okay.
Who you got, Chris?
Yeah, I think maybe I know who you're talking about, and I'm going to put them in here. Well, I was thinking first, so I wanted to take a creative approach to this, and at first
Fine,
I was thinking
Jonathan Frakes.
Instead of just putting four heads up on the mountain, I thought it would be nicer to do it as a scene, kind of like a mural. And I was picturing doing it as the decontamination chamber on Enterprise. If you remember, there's that scene where they come back up, and even Porthos needs a rubdown. And so Porthos is on the bench. Archer is bending over to rub Porthos. T'Pol is rubbing Archer's back. And then Hoshi is rubbing T'Pol's back and, like, trying to take her shirt off or something in the image.
You guys, stop laughing. He's being serious.
I thought that would look awesome on the side of a mountain, but it probably doesn't encompass the franchise as a whole well enough for this little exercise.
Depends on what you mean by whole.
So, like Drew and Philip, you know, I wanted to choose a woman. And so, of course, my first one would have to be Robin Loeffler.
Because, all right.
Now, is that Star Trek New Frontier? Or?
She makes Darmok in the game watchable. She's the reason why Darmok... She must be the reason why Darmok is so popular among Star Trek fans.
That was a head slap, ladies and gentlemen. That was Daniel's head slapping.
I believe the way you refer to her is Loeffler as the Chris Stairs.
Yes, that's an Intimarian. That is how you say it. So, no, seriously, my four, like I said, I wanted to take a creative approach to it, meaning the creative side of Star Trek. And so the first person is a duplicate of what some of you have said, which is Rick Berman, because I think that I really get disappointed when I hear so many Star Trek fans talk about how Rick Berman drove the franchise into the ground. You know, if it weren't for Rick Berman, we wouldn't have, we would have The Next Generation, but we probably wouldn't have Deep Space Nine. We wouldn't have Voyager. We wouldn't have Enterprise. He worked really, really hard to carry the torch for Gene Roddenberry's vision, but at the same time, allow Star Trek to evolve, but keep it within a framework so that it didn't just completely, you know, jump the targ, as Klingons say. So, Rick
that
Berman.
That is what they say. I've heard that.
That is what they say, yeah.
You have to be
careful, too, because their backs are pointy, and if you don't make it, then you have to go in the decon chamber for a rubdown.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so Rick Berman is one, and then another is a duplicate, which is Ira Stephen Baer, because his contribution to Deep Space Nine and shaping that storytelling, I think, was really important for the franchise, because you see more and more now a growing appreciation for Deep Space Nine, because of all the series, it's the one that fits more closely with television of today. And so when people come in and they watch it now, I think they can associate with the storytelling. And they can really get engrossed in it. And I think that can then lead people into other areas of Star Trek as well. Plus, how can you not like a guy who walks around with a blue goatee on, right? So Ira Stephen Baer. And then third is Michael Westmore, because his makeup work throughout all of modern Star Trek really created the entire visual identity of all the aliens and the races that we see on the show. And so when you see Star Trek on television, apart from the uniforms and everything else, that's one way that you really know this is Star Trek. Like, this is a Star Trek alien versus this is a Star Wars alien or some other alien.
You could have him with Klingon ridges for, like, the real scholars to know what it's all about. They'll be, like, explaining it to their families, like, no, that's not what he looked like. It's a whole thing.
Well, you wouldn't even have to like mold that, you know, like to chisel that out. You just leave the regular mountains.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that would work. Yeah,
yeah. The tour guide.
Well, you know what you would do is you would let him design his own forehead.
Drew's all seem to involve like less work. You seem to try to
because
find
I
a
know
shortcut
that no
to
one's
making these
do
monuments.
This, so
done.
I'm going to end up having to do it. So,
do you work for the Stone Carver Union? Is that what this is? Are you
only
now,
if you did that? Would it take 4 or 5 hours every morning to open the park so that you could see the mountain? You got to put the mountain in the makeup chair.
But every day.
Then my final person is actually two people, but they're always together. So why not just chisel them right there together? And that would, of course, be Mike and Denise Okuda, because they are responsible for so much of the what we call Okudagrams, the set design, the control panels, so much of the look of the show. They are the historians of the show. They're the people who know pretty much every detail of every prop or visual or anything that was done on modern Star Trek. And so I think that Mike and Denise have to be up there as well.
All right. So so for Chris, definitely a modern approach to the list. We have, again, Rick Berman.
Don't forget Robin Loeffler. Now she was the one Robin you were Loeffler. Saying that no one had mentioned yet, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Robin Loeffler.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Robin Loeffler, Rick Berman.
How many times is she on the same monument?
As many as she wants to be, okay?
Okay, fine.
She's laying down underneath all the big heads. There's just Robin Loeffler laying down.
Whoa.
See,
there are children trying to draw on this monument. She can't be laying down
there.
They
have to climb over Loeffler.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, like, Chris, every time that you make a joke about Robin Loeffler, I myself think, yes, he's right. Oh, wait, he's making a joke. Oh, that's too bad, because he's right. Anyway.
Well, am I making a joke?
Well, I don't know.
I don't get why people think Darmok is so bad.
It's not bad. It's the one that introduced that jacket.
I love that jacket, man.
It's also
I
where
do.
They introduced Robin Loeffler.
Right.
And so the jacket and Robin Loeffler.
I love saying Shaka when the walls fell.
Who doesn't love saying Shaka when the walls fell? Come on, people. Jeez.
Now that's a band name.
That's the best quote.
That is a band name right there. Yeah.
Shaka when the walls fell. That's got to actually be a band.
It is a band.
I'm pretty sure that's a German band.
I'm sure that it's an album title if it's not a band name.
Sure.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Okay, so aside from Robin Loeffler, Chris, you have Rick Berman, Ira Stephen Bear, Michael Westmore, and Michael and Denise Okuda.
That's right.
Okay. So that's everyone, right? I'm not forgetting anyone? Okay. Okay, good. So by my count, if we were to go off of, if we were being democratic about this and going off of votes, the four faces on this monument.
Again, I don't approve of this process.
Okay.
What you're doing, completely wrong.
That's because you're the only one that voted for the Borg cube.
The Borg would definitely not do it democratically.
No, I think that there's no logic in like how many votes a person got. Everyone has
it's
different
like
reasons.
It's like you're saying ratings determine what kind of TV show stays in the air. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Then just for, you know...
just for your own need to classify everything and
to
define it
mountain.
So that you can assimilate it into your worldview.
Just as a way of summarizing the discussion.
Summarizing. That's a good way of talking about brutal discernment.
The four faces would be Gene Roddenberry, Rick Berman, Leonard Nimoy, and William Shatner.
I'm okay
that's
with
not,
that.
That's not a bad group. Yeah. Any thoughts? Any final thoughts from anyone?
I kind of think that I want to see like a monument that is like that is the, not the faces, but like the things that are not easily definable. Like I like the idea of a Jeffrey's tube, or like the Livingston
hand.
Fish,
the Mutara,
or like
Nebula.
Majel Barrett's voice. You know, like interesting ways of representing like the non-obvious parts of these people.
Fair enough. I mean, maybe the best monument would just be an Enterprise.
See, I went back and forth on that. Yeah, I really like that idea. And, like, honestly, that would be the coolest looking one.
But which Enterprise? Mm-hmm.
Except for the Borg Cube.
I don't know. That might be cooler than the Borg Cube.
It would be, but if Daniel were in charge of the project, it would never get made because he would be able to decide what kind of nacelles to put on it, you know.
No, bigger.
Bigger. The whole mountain could just be nacelles.
Daniel, there's no more rock.
We need more nacelles. Bring
it in. Would it just be two parallel mountain ranges, each one being a nacelle?
It would be like easier to just do it upside down. I like the Jeffries Tube idea very much, though. It reminds me of those, I can't remember the name of it anymore. In Alabama, I've been gone too long.
Caves?
We have they're caves, but there's a specific place in Alabama, and you can go down, you know, into the caves. And I can picture that as instead of caves and just the path that you walk down, if it were Jeffries Tubes, and you did have to crawl all the way down until you get to the bottom, and then there's a magic warp core pond or something.
That sounds like nightmarish.
Well, there's this brewery. It's really great stuff.
And they give free beer at the tour. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it.
we really do have a Star Trek monument already, and it's the Vasquez Rocks, isn't it?
Oh,
is it?
That's true.
I think it pretty much is.
Don't have to do anything to it, except make sure it doesn't erode and fall over.
Anyway. All right. Well, that was pretty cool. Thanks, everyone, for participating. I guess we'll just go around the world again and see if where people can find all of you. Does that sound like a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
Drew.
I like how you're going around the world with everyone in this tiny little slither of space on the east coast of the U.S.
Yeah.
And then we have to, like, jump to the other side of the... Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I mean, it's the way it works. So, Drew.
Okay. It's the way it works.
It's the way it works.
Mostly everything is about America, and sometimes we mention someplace else. Obviously,
by having Chris here, this
is
a worldwide
works.
Podcast. It's like the World Series.
Yes. International.
Just by having a Canadian team.
Internationally famous.
So Chris is our token non-American guy right now? Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Don't say it.
Even though he's from America.
Right. Well, right.
You can find me on Twitter at 005. DOUBLEOFIVE. And you can find me on Standard Orbit on the other side of the network with Mike. And you can find me on various other, all these people and their
names.
Other shows. I'm on their shows a lot.
Okay, so Jason, I'm sorry, I can't keep track of this stuff. Jason, where can people find you on the internet?
Most recently as a sci-fi guy NJ on Twitter. And more recently as the production manager over on Star Trek Equinox, trying to make that the fan production of reality. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it looks very promising. Yeah. And congrats on landing Stan Lee. That guy's really cool.
Yeah.
That's gonna be entertaining.
Yes, it will. All right. Daniel, where can people find
you? People can find me on Trek FM at Earl Grey. That's the name of the show, Mike, just so you know. With Philip. Actually, you've been on the show before, so I think you should. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
I know where to find it. Even if I don't know what it's called, I know where to find it. That's all that matters. All right.
Where we talk TNG every week. And then you can find me on Twitter as well at 1UpDan, and that is the number one, not the word.
All right. And Philip?
They can find me at the Trek.fm site as well, writing articles about TNG, and just finished my first Voyager article that's now on the website. But you can also find me on Earl Grey as well with Daniel. That's EARLGREY, decaf or caffeinated, every week talking TNG. And my Twitter handle is at NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina.
Cool. And finally, Chris, just to make it easier, where can't we find you?
America.
the easiest way to catch me, if you want to chat, is probably on Twitter. And my username there is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. And then on the shows, there's Literary Treks, which is books and comics, Star Trek books and comics. Warp 5 is Enterprise, The Orb. Deep Space Nine, Continuing Mission, fan films, MatterStream, our interviews about things that are kind of related to Star Trek, and then the Ready Room every week with all you guys. Everyone here is on there from time to time, and that's Star Trek news and all the live-action Star Trek series.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, everyone, for joining us. We really appreciate it. You're all welcome back at any time. And, yeah, this has been a lot of fun, and I think it was an interesting discussion, and hopefully our listeners got something out of it, too. Well, that was a lot of fun talking to the rest of Trek FM about...
the wrong choices for a Mount Rushmore of Star Trek people, yeah.
Yeah, or the right choices, depending
There's
on
There's no right choices.
Okay, all right, fair enough. But that's not all that we're talking about this week on Trek FM.
We're not all talking about Mount Rushmores?
Nope. So here's a taste of what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Dr. McCoy with Larry Nemechek.
But, you know, when everybody else had their Kirk shirt or their Spock shirt, like the first uniform I had my mom make me was a McCoy uniform, of course.
Earl Grey.
The 7-7 Challenge.
Did you know that Tim Russ was one of the possible choices for Commander Geordi LaForge?
But did you know he was also in Star Trek Generations?
But did you know he was also served with Captain Sulu on board the Excelsior?
I did know that, in fact. The Orb.
Our Man Bashir Commentary.
I love Avery. Tell me what happens next.
And the look up at an angle. He's not even looking at Bashir, he's looking up at the angle. Tell me what happens next.
The Ready Room.
Spectre of the Gun.
They're so quick to jump to conclusions, like the guy gets shot in front of them and they're like, death is the only thing that's real on this planet. And I'm like, wait a minute, how do you know that? That could just be a total figment of your imagination as well.
To the journey!
Favorite Sun commentary.
Yeah, Janeway is... you better get more coffee, sweetie. It's going to be a long day. Ensign Kim is going to put you through some hell.
Warp 5.
Alternate outcomes of the Zindi crisis.
But the Enterprise is heavily damaged. We're talking... practically destroyed. Everything but a shell. Maybe the saucer section is the only thing that's still around. And 80% of the crew dies. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Rick Berman and Star Trek.
He's kind of a moving target, so he found some dimensionality. He made it into a cube.
Yeah.
And so he was able to move things around in there.
A poor cube.
Continuing mission.
Star Trek Equinox.
John Savage actually came up with the premise for the story, but they needed somebody to flesh it out, to develop it. And so they sent me John's premise, and I just, well, it expanded into the script for the project that we're doing.
Melodic Treks.
The Borg in Music.
When they released it as a Blu-ray,
when they combined them.
They connected them, and there's the no feature. Delay. They cut off that music, and then it's just like, oh, that didn't work.
Literary Treks.
Rise of the Federation, Tower of Babel.
Saval talks about this idea that, you know, people mutually consent to abide by these rules for their collective benefit. The idea that, you know, absolute unfettered freedom is just a ridiculous idea.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows to get in on the daily Trek Talk. You can find a new show every day of the week, sometimes more than one show. All those people who you heard and loved just now, you can find elsewhere on the network doing various things. You can find us on iTunes on our new artists page, itunes.com/Trek FM. You can find us on Stitcher, Windows Phone, all the various Windows devices like TuneIn and all that stuff.
So many ways.
Yeah, right. Go to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory, and you can get all the links right there.
It is by far the most obvious one.
Yes. So that was great. Now, Mount Rushmore.
I've heard that it's not as big as you'd expect.
I don't know. I've been there. I was there as a kid.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was it as big as you expected?
You know, my reaction was pretty much the same as Bruce Dern's reaction in Nebraska. They go to Mount Rushmore, and he's like, "Nah, whatever."
Yeah.
And then he leaves.
Yes. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. You're saying that it is just a thing on a mountain.
Yeah, it's so far away that you can't even... Anyway, it doesn't matter. If you want some good Mount Rushmore action, check out Alfred Hitchcock's North by Northwest. Really good movie.
Well, it's a movie.
And the finale obviously takes place on Mount Rushmore, so that's cool.
Yes. Also, the Family Guy episode is pretty great.
However, you know, there's a book here about Mount Rushmore, too, which you can find on
Audible. What? Is it an in-depth analysis of Mount Rushmore's creation?
I'm not sure. It's called Flat Stanley's Worldwide Adventures, Number 1, The Mount Rushmore Calamity.
Oh, God, I got to read that to learn more about how Mount Rushmore was made.
Well, luckily for you, you can get it for free on Audible.com since you're a listener on Trek FM. Here's a description. It's written by Jeff Brown, narrated by Vinnie Penna. It's 38 minutes long, unabridged. Here's the description. The whole Lamb Chop family is off to see Mount Rushmore, but when Flat Stanley and his brother Arthur team up with a scrappy cowgirl named Calamity Jasper, their vacation turns into the Wild West experience of a lifetime. Pretty soon they find themselves in a real tight spot, even for a flat boy like Stanley.
This sounds fascinating.
It does, doesn't it? And you can get this for free on Audible.com since you're a listener on Trek FM. Audible is a place where you can find all of your favorite books, you know, whether they're old books, new
or
books.
Not old books.
They've got like 100.
Heavy books, light books.
They've got like 150,000 books.
Books that are far away, books that are nearby.
They've got like 150,000 books on Audible.com. And since you listen to Trek FM, you can sign up and get your first book for free. It's pretty amazing. You get a 30-day trial membership. You can see what Audible is all about. If you like it, you can continue. It's great. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. for all of your Flat Stanley needs. All right. Well, that's a wrap on Season 3. We will be back next week to start our brand new fourth season. We'll find out whether or not one of us is coming back or whether or not we're going to be a,
Borg
or whatever. We're going to be talking about our next Star Trek creator, Larry Nemechek.